You're listening to Flip Empire, the show committed to helping real estate entrepreneurs who want to build their empire without sacrificing their life. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
We just finished celebrating the 7-year anniversary of the Flip Empire show. And I want to celebrate that with you because this show would not exist if it wasn't for your support, if it wasn't for those of you who chose to subscribe and to listen and to share and rate and review the show. So thank you. Thank you so much. My name is Alex Pardo. From the bottom of my heart, genuinely appreciate you. And I'm coming at you with episode 697 here with my good friend, Bobby Suarez. And on today's podcast episode, we are going to talk specifically to those who have an ambition, a desire to grow and scale a business while still maintaining lifestyle, while still being able to have the freedom to do the things that you want to do with your family, with your loved ones. Bobby's somebody who has successfully been able to accomplish that. He's created a brand, selltobobby.com, has a team of 16 team members, and still enjoys a lot of time with his family, traveling, doing the things that gives him joy and fulfillment, while also creating impact, not just on the people in his team that he hires and employs, but also those that he's serving and helping out in the community. So I believe you're going to get a lot out of this podcast episode. This is not something that Bobby does frequently as far as coming on podcast. And so I'm grateful that he chose to open up and share. And I think you'll benefit as a result. So let's dive into episode 697 with my good friend, Bobby Suarez. Welcome, my friends. I'm excited to bring you another masterclass here on the Flip Empire Show. And today is going to be a little bit different than what you guys might be accustomed to, whether you're listening to me for the first time or you've been a listener for the last 7 years. We just crossed the 7-year anniversary of the Flip Empire Show. And I wanted to bring you a good friend of mine, somebody who I've known for a number of years, somebody who I trust, respect, and also is not somebody that really puts themselves out there too much. I think this is one of a couple of podcasts he's done, but he's just somebody that comes with a lot of integrity, just a good quality dude, and one of the best wholesalers and real estate investors, fix and flippers that I know, and I happen to know quite a few throughout the country. So I'm happy to bring you my friend, Bobby Suarez. Bobby, what's up, dude? Welcome to the podcast, my friend.
Yeah, Alex. Thank you for that great introduction, man.
Again, I know we were talking offline. Thank you for doing this, man, and for being willing to open up. I know this is something you don't do too often. But with that said, man, I want to kind of hop into it. I was just looking here, and I had you on episode 132. This is episode 697. So we're talking, I don't know, probably 5-6 years ago, I had you on the show. And I recall, man, as I was thinking about the direction I wanted to try to take this interview, I remember you and I having lunch at Booyah in Doral. This was before COVID for sure, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And at that time, I remember you had a pretty small team. I think you were sharing with me, you had 4 in-house cold callers at the time. And dude, over the last probably 24 months or so, I've seen your business explode. You're like on all over billboards in South Florida. You were shouted out on Dan Le Batard and Stu Gatz. I mean, you got TV commercials. You got what seems to be a pretty awesome team with pretty cool culture, at least from what I can tell on social media. And if I know you the way I think I do, you got quality people on your team. Dude, give us an update. Like, what does business look like today? And how has this growth happened over the last 2 to 3 years?
Yeah, so throughout the years, I know my business has changed completely. So now I think we have like 16 employees. We stopped doing cold calling. So now we're focusing a lot on inbound marketing versus outbound marketing. So we're doing a lot of TV, billboards, pay-per-click advertisements, some social media marketing. What I feel like it's a full-blown operation. I have a COO, I have director of sales, lead managers, acquisition agents, display agents.
Was this always the goal for you? So go back to when you and I were sitting across from each other at lunch. Was this the vision you had? You wanted to grow and scale this wholesaling and fix and flip operation in South Florida? Or is this something that as you started to join masterminds and you started to just after years and years of accumulating experience in this business, did it just happen by chance? Or was this a vision you had years ago?
Definitely, it was a vision that I've had. Very ambitious. I definitely wanted to have a big operation and obviously make as much money as I can. Joining masterminds and different groups like that definitely helped accelerate my success. I'm sure the same happened with you.
Sure.
They gave me more clarity and more direction, kind of like cheat codes, man, on what you need to do to succeed and be successful.
Yeah. If you don't mind, man, I want to kind of take a left turn early on in this interview. And I want to ask you, because I recall years ago, you weren't very open to the idea of joining Mastermind. I remember we had a conversation. You're like, man, I'm not really sure. And you were doing really, really well at that time. What was the shift for you mentally where you decided, hey, you know what? I am going to invest in myself. I am going to join a Mastermind community. Because I remember early on, you weren't really open to it at that time.
Yeah, in my mind, honestly, man, it was hard to understand why somebody would share their trade secrets or secrets to teach you how to get better. So obviously, I learned that from talking to you, to our mutual friend, Ray, that he's like actually one of the guys that introduced me to one of the guys in CG. Maybe it was you too. I don't remember now. Mm-hmm. Just talking to you guys, and you guys really opened up my on these masterminds. And I went to one of the meetings as kind of like a trial, and I was sold.
Yeah, yeah. Were you sold by the fact that you saw not just the content that was being shared, but the quality of the people? And like, what part did relationships play a role in you deciding to like make that leap and make that investment?
Definitely both. The caliber of guys in these masterminds are definitely up there. Like when I got in there, definitely I was a smaller player when I first started.
Right.
And it was just a bunch of great people, man. Always willing to share to help. A bunch of go-givers, honestly.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, man. For me, dude, these communities, these masterminds, it's all about the relationships, because you can go to your YouTube, your Instagram, you can find the content out there, quality content. But it's like you said, I like the way that you put it. It's a cheat code, right? It's like, it's not an easy button, but it's an accelerator to your business, man. So I've been a friend of yours for a number of years. And again, from the outside looking in, see the growth and the maturation of you and your business. At that time, we had lunch. You may have had a handful of people on your team. Now you've basically 3x that. What have been some of the challenges, Bobby, when it comes to hiring, finding the right people, onboarding them, training them? Because a lot of the wholesalers and real estate investors across the country that I speak to, there's a lot of turnover challenges that they have in their business, right? They're always one acquisition manager or salesperson away from stepping back into that role. Yeah. What have been some of the challenges, and what have you found has really helped you when it comes to finding the right people and then just building this culture?
Well, I would have to say multiple things. So definitely having the right tools. Like for example, when I first started hiring, I invested in the predictive index, which is a behavioral assessment. And I realized right then and there that some of the people I had in my team were the wrong people. So I had to make some quick changes, hire new ones. And honestly, I just invested money. I paid people really well from the beginning. I brought people, some of the people I could trust, like my COO, director of sales, and build teams around them.
Yeah.
We've also hired recruiters to help us find the top talent in our area.
Yeah.
And pay them well, honestly, man. Take care of your people. I'm not trying to squeeze every employee or team member so I could make more money. Honestly, man, I want to pay them well so that they're happy. They could provide a good future for their family and build a career here in my company.
Yeah. If we literally stopped the podcast 8 minutes into this thing and people walked away with just that one tidbit about paying people well and treating them well, I think it would have been worth people's time and our time. Honestly, whether it's conscious or unconscious, trying to squeeze every bit of margin possible for themselves. And I think that's what contributes to a lot of turnover. Aside from the fact that we can spend a lot of time probably talking about like the hiring process and the onboarding, like making sure you have the right people. But once you've gotten to that point where you realize you do have the right person, whether it's an A player, a rock star, however you want to call them, taking care of them, man, like really making sure that they're well compensated, because without them, it's going to be hard for you to grow and scale. And there's only so much you can do on your own. What have been some of the challenges now when it comes to actually building a team? My team never got as large as yours. I think I got to 9 people. I went from spending a lot of time on the phone and living rooms, meeting with sellers, to now not doing any of that, but managing a team, leading people, just dealing with the psychology of humans sometimes can be very, very interesting. Talk to me about like your role as the CEO of Sell to Bobby, and just like how has that played a role, and what have some of those challenges been as far as like leadership and management, et cetera?
Yeah. First and foremost, our business is easy. The hardest part is the people.
So yeah.
Finding good talent was hard. Keeping everybody incentivized, motivated. People have personal problems, man, and we don't just treat them like employees. We treat them like team members or like family. You know what I mean? So it's important that you have that culture in your office. people love coming to work in my office. We allow some people to go to work virtually, but they love being here in our office. We have a nice office, nice atmosphere. Everybody that works here is, we're all in the same mindset. Like, nobody's hating against each other. I don't allow any of that negativity in my office, honestly.
Man, I can tell sometimes on your Instagram stories, I've seen like little snippets of like your team meetings or your, I don't know if you call them huddles, or I don't know if you guys operate on EOS or not, but like just your meetings. Yeah. And I could tell because I've been in those shoes and I know what it's like to run that type of operation. Maybe not to the degree that you've built, but I can tell there's a certain positive energy and vibe. Like, from the outside looking in, again, it looks like you guys are close and you're walking alongside each other, all going towards the same goal, versus teams that I've been a part of and I've consulted with some investors across the country where there's a lot of division or they have the clock in, clock out mentality. And it seems like you've built the exact opposite of that.
Like I said, I incentivize my team so that they treat this like their own business within my business. And that's how a lot of them truly feel, man. They have their own business within my business. Obviously, they got to follow, make sure that they're doing things the right way. Like I said, a lot of them have really taken that literally and they treat it like their own business within my business. Yeah.
We don't have to talk specifics. So again, feel free to share whatever you're comfortable sharing, but just let's kind of take a 30,000 foot view. One of the questions I get pretty frequently, especially from real estate investors that are doing a couple of deals a month or so, and now they want to get to the point where they're doing 5, 10, 15, 20 deals a month, and they want to build out a team. And that's not for everyone, by the way, right? Like I realized for me, like that's not ultimately what I wanted. You're the exact opposite. Like you had a vision where you wanted to grow and scale, and you've successfully done that. What are some compensation frameworks that people can follow? Because I'm sure you've kind of tweaked and played with different compensation structures. And again, I'm not asking you for specifics on yours, but just can you provide a framework of what you have found works for the typical investor that wants an acquisition manager or a lead manager, dispositions manager, et cetera?
Yeah. So for example, like you just mentioned lead managers. My lead managers have their salary up front that I pay them, but I also incentivize and I pay them a percentage of the profits. That way, they're celebrating when we celebrate that we close a new deal. Yeah. So we're all aligned. For example, transaction coordinators, we pay them a salary plus bonuses, even some higher up positions like the executive team. I pay them every time we cross a milestone, let's say. For example, every time we cross a million, I give them a bonus.
Just to interject for a second, is that on a million like gross?
Gross.
Gross. Got it. Okay.
I have some people that I know on the bottom line, which is on the net.
Right.
Like, for example, my director of sales, we do different profit sharing where I do pay them based on the net.
Okay. Got it. And you have found that paying people well, obviously taking care of them, I would say, how long would you say most of your team has been with you? Like, at least when it comes to your COO, your director of sales, who I see on your Instagram stories all the time, seems like a good dude. Yeah. How long on average would you say these people have been on your team?
Multiple years. Like I have my oldest employee, Anna. I wouldn't call her an employee, a team member.
Yeah.
She's been with me in January. She turned 6 years. My COO has been with me for almost 2 years. A majority have been with me for multiple years.
And I asked that question. I kind of already knew the answer, but I asked because I really wanted to highlight and underscore for people listening and watching that when you create a business and you start with core values, which to me, my opinion, is the foundation of a business. You start with core values and you hire, you lead, you manage, you fire by those core values, you're set up for success, right? Now, there's a lot of other factors and components. Kudos to you, dude. I tip my hat because you were clear on your core values. You attracted your tribe. You've compensated them well. You've taken care of them. And now you have people that are with you 5, 6 years, which is amazing, man. You're not dealing, it doesn't appear, with a lot of the common struggles and challenges that people deal with, which doesn't surprise me because a lot of people are trying to cut corners, trying to figure out how much they can keep versus how much they can give. And so I appreciate you opening up and sharing that. I want to kind of transition. I saw something on Facebook and I won't mention the influencer's name just because I didn't have a conversation with them about this and say that I was going to put this out there, even though they put it out. But they basically did a post on Facebook not so long ago about keeping church and state divided. Let me elaborate for those listening. What this particular person meant by that is he was suggesting and recommending that as the leader of your business, as the CEO, as the visionary, that you don't allow employees, Bobby and I refer to them as team members because that's really what they are. They're not employees. But he was making the argument that you shouldn't allow these people into your personal life. And he took it a step further and was saying, and he used the word employees, I don't have my employees, we're not friends on Instagram and Facebook. And I know this person. So the way that it came across, I think it was a little, it sounded cold. He was just saying that he thinks it's better for business to not be friend to friend basis with your team members. I happen to disagree. I took the complete opposite approach. I was very close with my team. I have a small team now. I'm close to them. I asked them about their family. I asked them about their kids. But I could also see how some people would say, hey, I think that's a mistake. Where do you land on that and why?
Yeah, so I saw that post also. Man, I agree with you, Alex. I'm friends with all my team members on social media. We talk on the weekends. Like, we almost have like that family approach. Like, if somebody's struggling, going through a rough patch or something, or their family member sick, dude, not only am I reaching out, the entire team is reaching out. We celebrate wins together. If one is struggling, we definitely try to go and help that team member out. Honestly, man, I don't agree with that post. I think it also depends on the industry and the size of the company. I think once you get to a bigger operation, 50 plus employees or something like that. But when you're running I don't know if my operation's considered mom and pop, but we have less than 20 employees. Man, I'm family members with all my people.
Yeah. You and I are cut from the same cloth. And by the way, I bring up that example, not to say that their approach is wrong. It's not a right or wrong thing. It's just different strokes, right? Like, you got to know. And to your point, man, I think you bring up a really good one, is that I'm sure Elon Musk is not having conversations with 3 or 4 feet levels down the totem pole. I mean, he's got his direct reports, and obviously he's at the top of the top. And then you have all the way down to small, tiny mom and pop operations. I don't personally consider yours a mom and pop operation, but if we're comparing it to somebody who's got hundreds of employees, then of course, to play devil's advocate against the way that you and I approach it, I think the only time where I've seen it's potentially gotten me in a little bit of a sticky situation is where I become so close to my team members that the conversation turns from a working relationship to a friendship to now be my coach or therapist, right? Like, I remember I had one team member who I could tell was just having a rough week, and I talked to her, and the conversation quickly, like, she just opened up about relationship drama and struggles she was having. I found myself probably 30 minutes into this conversation not feeling uncomfortable, but if I'm being honest, unsure of how to approach it, because I had taken off the team member or manager hat and I had put on a friend hat, and then it quickly turned into like a coach therapist hat. And that's the only situation I have found throughout the years where it's like, man, honestly, I'm not 100% sure if I'm handling this the right way. Have you ever been in a situation like that where like you start to feel like the person's coach or therapist?
Honestly, the way that I see it, those are the benefits of people working with me. They get that personal time. You give them that mentorship, that whatever you want to call it, that therapy moment or 30 minutes of private talk. Honestly, I feel like that's actually a benefit of working with guys like me and you, Alex. It's part of, like I said, if you're friends on social media and you're growing a relationship together, I think it's completely normal.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, man, dude, clearly it's working for you. What's the vision moving forward? Like, how big do you want to get this team? I'm curious what the next kind of 12 to 24, 36 months looks like for you.
Yeah, so definitely want to grow a little bit more than where I'm at right now. We just filmed a new Spanish TV commercial for the second time. Our first time didn't really have much success.
Okay.
So I actually put my wife in the commercial. We did a couple different changes to see if it helps. And we're hoping that that takes off. And if it does, we'll probably have to hire a few more people. I don't see me growing past having 20 team members. I enjoy having a lifestyle business. I don't want to be here 24/7. And I don't want my team members to be here 24/7.
Yeah.
So honestly, I think I'm going to be on cruise control in the near future.
You brought up a question that I was going to get to this, but I'll bring it up now since you used the words lifestyle investor. I see you as a lifestyle investor. And I think one of the things that's really unique about you, dude, is that you've been able to accomplish being a lifestyle investor while having what I consider, and I think what a lot of people would consider, at least in our space, in our industry, to have a pretty big team. Yes, do you and I know people that have 20, 30, 50 team members? We do, although I think those are few and far between. But to me, a team of 16 is pretty big size for our space, at least, again, in my opinion. And you've been able to build that while still spending time in the Keys with your family, on the boat, just traveling. I think I saw you at Siesta Key a week or so ago with the family, or wherever you may have been in Florida. But the point is, you travel a lot. You spend time with your kids, with your wife. I can tell that's really important to you from some of our conversations. I know it's important to you. How have you been able to scale the business the way you have and maintains that freedom and lifestyle to do the things you want to do with the people you want to spend time with?
It all comes down to my people, man, hiring quality people. Honestly, everybody has been handpicked to come work in my company. And I feel that's been the difference, where I could take off and leave and I know things are getting done and they're being done properly. So it all comes down to hiring, obviously, good leadership. I have an amazing COO. I have a great director of sales. And even everybody else, man, they're amazing.
Yeah.
Like I said, everybody's been handpicked to come work here. It all goes down to my leadership team.
Okay.
I'm able to take off. They're getting stuff done. So it works.
I'm not surprised to hear that, because that aligns. Somebody very big influencer and thought leader in our space told me years ago when I was building the wholesaling operation, he said, Alex, you're one quality key rockstar COO away from having that freedom and lifestyle you want while growing the business. So I didn't know that that was going to be your answer, but it's very much aligned with that feedback and insight that he gave me. This is somebody that you knew. What's her name again? Your COO, you mentioned her earlier.
Janina Scuderi.
And you had been working with her prior, like before she came your COO, she was already in your team, or this is somebody you just had a relationship with?
No, we had a relationship. She's actually my wife's best friend.
Okay.
She was working for a Fortune 100 company, head of the HR department. Has an amazing personality. Everybody that she talks to loves her. And I knew she would be an amazing fit for my company. So at that time, we had another COO that he decided to go a different route. He had a different passion that he wanted to follow.
Yeah.
And once that happened, I immediately reached out to Janina because I knew she was going to be great for this role.
What about her? Like, what are some of the, for people listening, like, and maybe not speak specifically to her, but like, what are some of the characteristics or qualities that people should be looking for in a number two or a COO?
So for me, it was important to hire somebody, first of all, that I could trust. Most importantly, I know it's tough if you're hiring with a recruiter, but for me, I was fortunate to have known her. So I definitely trust her with my eyes closed. Second, she has to complement or be different from what she's better at, things that I'm not good at.
Yeah.
I'm more direct. I don't want to beat around the bush. I'll give you the answer straight up. She knows how to handle and work with people in a different way. She knows how to talk to people better, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So her communication skills are a lot better. She's definitely organized. She has a bunch of great qualities. She handles everything operations. Like half the things that I've done in the office, I don't even know what she does, but she gets it done.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think a mistake that I see people make sometimes is they hire somebody because they like them or because they're like them, if that makes sense, right? And that's not always the people you should hire. Just because you like somebody and get along with them and could see yourself having a beer with them or hanging out with them, that doesn't necessarily mean that's the right person for that role. And one of the things Bobby said that makes a ton of sense is she's better than him at certain things. And I'm sure he's better than her at certain things. And so make sure that you're crystal clear on the roles and responsibilities and what role you want a person to fill. Like I always like to do, one of the things that's really helped me when I think about some of my best hires, Bobby, and I don't know if you've done this at all or not, or maybe you have a different approach, is I write down an avatar for, like, if I could wave a magic wand at this position and I could hire the perfect person, I literally write down a description, an avatar of this person. And I have found just by doing that, my level of awareness is so high that now I see people that were always under my nose, so to speak, but I wasn't clear on who I wanted and why I wanted them. And for me, like my best hires, similar to you, I think, have been in my network or my network's network. Not too often have I hired somebody that I had zero relationship with and they ended up like really working out long term. Not that it hasn't, but by and large, my best hires have been through relationships, right? And so I think that's why you and I are so relationally driven. So yeah, I mean, hopefully that resonates with people, is that it's about relationships and you could be potentially one key hire away from having the freedom that you're after. Because at the end of the day, dude, I think for the most part, that's why we're all in business. It's for freedom. It's to have impact on others and to also have the freedom to do the things that we want to do. Let me kind of transition here, dude, as we start to kind of wind down the show. Obviously, I feel like on many podcasts that you listen to or YouTube shows or even events that you and I go to, the conversation naturally gravitates towards the market. Like, where are we at in this market cycle? What do you think is going to happen? So rather than ask you what you think is going to happen, share with me some of the things that you guys are doing from a marketing perspective to the degree which you can that you find are just working well for you.
Do you want to know what type of marketing we're doing?
Just specifically in general, like as an example, 4 years ago, you guys were cold calling. I remember that being a pretty big arrow in your quiver from a marketing and lead gen perspective. What has that evolved to? Again, I know you guys are doing PPC and TV commercials. And there's going to be, quite honestly, Bobby, a lot of people listening to this show that maybe are not at the point where they can afford to spend tens of thousands of dollars to produce a TV commercial and constantly run those types. And you got to have the team to be able to service those leads. So let's talk to somebody who's, they've already figured out how to do some deals and maybe they have a small team, but they are looking to grow and scale. Like, what are some of the marketing channels you would advise based on your experience? Obviously, you've walked this path that you would say, hey, here are some of the marketing channels that you should really look to lean into.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the easier one that's inbound marketing that I consider inbound would be PPC. It's easier to get started on that. Like I said, we run PPC. TV is also great, but it's going to require definitely spending a lot more money depending on your market. Like, for example, here in South Florida, we're spending north of 40 grand a week. So it's definitely a hefty amount. Also billboards, man. We have billboards up that I'm paying 9 grand a month. Okay. So I definitely would stay away from those, from the last two, until you have a pretty nice bankroll. Yeah. I would definitely, if I were to advise somebody, I would tell them to get started on PPC first.
Would your advice, Bobby, to be, if we're having a conversation with somebody who, again, maybe they do a deal or two a month, maybe they do a little bit more than that, would your advice be to outsource that to somebody who's considered a pay-per-click expert to run those campaigns? Or would your advice be, hey, learn it, do it, and then maybe decide if you want to outsource it?
Man, hire the best and have them do it. I see a lot of young investors or young entrepreneurs that they want to try to figure it out on their own, and then they end up shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah.
So focus on what you're good at. If you're good at getting deals, just do that. Let somebody else handle that marketing side for you.
Right. Let me play devil's advocate. And let's say I was one of those investors and I was to say to you, but Bobby, I can't afford them. Like, I can't afford to pay 9 grand a month on a billboard or whatever the numbers. I can't afford to hire a PPC expert and pay them $2,000 a month to manage the campaigns. What's your advice or feedback or the insight you would provide them?
Man, then find things that are cheaper or things that they could do on their own to build that bankroll. Like, I remember when I first got started, I didn't know anything about marketing. I was sourcing deals on the MLS, just submitting offers, and I would get a handful of deals a month.
Yeah.
So I would probably start there, door knocking, driving for dollars, obviously do things that kind of like guerrilla marketing per se. You know?
Right, right. And
until you build that bankroll, until you're able to invest back in your business.
That's right. And that's actually where I was going is look at what percentage of your profits that you're bringing in from the one or two deals a month you're closing or however many deals, what percentage of those profits are being reinvested back into marketing? You and I have seen people that feast or famine, right? It's very common, I think, in our space to experience the roller coaster of having big months and then having one or two or three months where it's famine, where you're not doing anything. So how much of those profits are you reinvesting back into marketing? And then look at your lifestyle, man. I see people that we live in a microwave society, and I see people that go out and get the toys or experience the things they want to experience in the future, but they're doing it on a budget that can't provide that lifestyle now. And then they're sacrificing the reinvesting back into the business to get to that point. I don't know if you have any thoughts or if you have any comments on that, but that's something that I see a lot of people make the mistake on.
Definitely you got to sacrifice at the beginning, man. Like, I've been in this game since 2012 approximately. And dude, I didn't splurge on anything till a year or 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So definitely build your bankroll, save money. I'm even against telling it. I don't like even, like, there's a bunch of new investors that the first thing they want to do is build a rental portfolio. In my opinion, man, don't freeze any capital, man. Continue reinvesting it in your business. Build your bankroll. Once you have a significant amount of money, then you start putting it out if you want to lend, if you want to buy rentals. I see a lot of young investors make the mistake at the beginning. oh, I'm going to buy this rental. I'm going to cash flow $500. And they just froze their 30, 40 grand that they had.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. And now they're stuck.
I could not agree with you more. I think it's terrible. In my opinion, I think it's terrible advice for somebody just getting started that doesn't have a bankroll, that is looking to earn a living in this business, to start acquiring rentals. I remember years ago, when I say years ago, I'm talking like 2007, 8. I got started in 2005. I paid a lot of money to a particular mentor, and I was thinking, man, I want to start acquiring assets because that's why I got in this business. And he said, don't even think about acquiring assets until you have at least 100 grand in the account, right? Because the $200 or $300 or $500 a month that you're going to make on a particular property, A, it's not going to move the needle in your life, right? And you're going to be in that grind and hustle mode to continue to generate money to put food on the table. But B, you're one roof away, a furnace, a major CapEx event happening from that cash flow for the year being wiped out.
Oh, yeah.
And now, conversely, I think I waited too long before I actually started acquiring. Like, I got hooked on the quick cash of wholesaling. So that pendulum can swing the other way. And I think in my case, it did. One of the mistakes I made was waiting too long. I think I could have started acquiring assets when I had some cash built up. Dude, I totally agree. I didn't know that we were going to go here in the show, but I think it's such a valid point that if you're just getting started, unless you have a bankroll, just put the pause on acquiring assets, right? Yeah. Unless you're going to maybe acquire them creatively where you're not going to freeze up a bunch of your capital. Maybe that's a little bit of a different conversation, but you got to be well capitalized if you're going to start building a rental portfolio, in my opinion. Dude, last question I have for you here before we wrap this thing up is, I'm still a part of some of the WhatsApp groups of local investors here in South Florida. And one of the challenges that I continue to see, even though I'm not active in the wholesale side, is I still keep a finger on the pulse, is people going around each other's backs, shady characters out there, like going direct to the seller when you have a property under contract. That's something we experienced back in 2017, 18, 19. And now it seems like that problem has gotten even bigger. What are you guys doing to kind of combat that? What would you share with people listening to protect themselves? I don't know if this is more of a South Florida specific challenge, because I'm sure it happens across the country, but it seems like it's even a bigger problem here in South Florida.
I'm sure it happens a lot more here. We have a lot of competition in South Florida. So I think what's happening is that we're all chasing fewer fish now. Sometimes people, they're only chasing one fish. They see some, another wholesaler with that deal and they try to go around the seller. So what we're doing to combat that is, obviously, we're not email blasting our deals right away to the entire South Florida market. We're trying to sell them over the phone through text to our VIP buyers. And that's been working great for us, honestly.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. Got it. And then I think the other thing that I'll add to that is, make sure you stress test the deal. When you're meeting with homeowners, make sure that deal is airtight and that they're fully bought into working with you. And sometimes you can even stress test by asking a certain question and letting them know, like, hey, listen, you might have other so-called real estate investors contact you wanting to offer you more money. If and when that happens, how do you think you might handle that? Right? Like, so one of the things we used to always do was, right before we would sign the agreement, we'd stress test it. We'd sign the purchase agreement. We'd stress test it again and then continue to build the relationship with that seller. Just because you've gotten an executed purchase and sale agreement, don't wait until a day or two before closing to then contact them. If you don't have a transaction coordinator or somebody who's maintaining that relationship, just make sure that there's a frequent touch point with that seller and keep them apprised of the process as to what's going on or what they should expect. So I think it's all about setting expectations, getting buy-in, and continuing to build the relationship. I think that can also help mitigate some of these challenges.
I tell my transaction coordinator, they need to be at least in contact with a seller at least once a week.
Yeah, man.
And as a matter of fact, she's so good at doing it that every time we close a deal and the sellers are happy, they mention her in all the reviews.
Yeah.
So it's important, man, to keep that customer service. It's not just getting that contract.
That's right.
Forgetting about it. Make sure that you're babysitting that deal to closing.
Yeah, 100%, man. Bobby, brother, really thank you for the time, man. This has been awesome, dude. And you've dropped a lot of nuggets that I know are going to help people. I just flashed it on the screen for those who are watching on YouTube or online somewhere. But where's the best place, Bobby, for people to connect with you or reach out to you, whether they want to collaborate, maybe they have real estate they want to sell, whatever the case might be?
Yeah, so best way would be reach out to me on Instagram at Bobby Suarez. Also, if you have any deals you want to sell, feel free to go visit my website at selltobobby.com. We specialize in buying real estate in South Florida and Central Florida.
Yeah. And I'd also recommend you guys check that out. Bobby's just done a really good job from a branding perspective. Again, you know, billboards, TV, and that's a brand that I've really seen him grow throughout the year. So just a good example and things you can never copy somebody, but you can kind of model them and make sure that you tweak it and make it your own. So Bobby, my man, dude, as a friend, I'm proud of you, man. I really appreciate you hopping on here and just kind of sharing what you did, dude. Love to see you and your beautiful family just enjoying life. And it's really cool, man, to see you pouring into your team members and the culture you've built. I'm excited to watch you continue grow and help people, man. So thank you, dude.
Thank
awesome.
You,
again, we just crossed over the 7-year anniversary, which is just crazy to me because I never anticipated or expected this almost 700 episodes in. And that's a testament to you guys for sacrificing your time and your energy to listen to us. So I've always said the best way you can repay us is to take one or two things that Bobby shared today and implement it. We want to see you grow. We want to see you succeed. The pie is big enough for everybody. So if there's anything I can do to help you through this show, through our Ascend Mastermind or anything else, please reach out to me. And with that being said, we'll talk on the next episode. Take care. All right, my friend, I hope you enjoyed that Flip Empire episode and got a lot of value out of it. Make sure to check the show notes page for any resources that were mentioned. And speaking of resources, honestly, I don't think I've done the best job of sharing with you my top curated, highly recommended tools and resources that I use in my business or have used in my business. In some cases, these are affiliate relationships with people that I highly trust and respect. And I know these tools and resources can help you and your business go to the next level. And as an ethical bribe, if you decide to try out one of these resources using my link, I will go ahead and send you an unadvertised bonus. I'll send you something of high value. All you got to do is shoot me an email, alex@flipempire.com. Go ahead and let me know that you tried out this resource, and however I can help you getting started with that, chances are that I know it very, very well and currently use it or have used it. So make sure to check that out, flipempire.com/resources. And if I can be of help or service to you in any way, just shoot me an email, alex@flipempire.com, and I will do anything I can for you. Have an amazing day, and I'll catch you on the next show.